Good morning, Waiheke. Welcome to Island Life, your weekly catch-up on local people, events and issues here on Waiheke Radio. I'm Chris and I'm your host through until noon today. Thank you very much to the Humble Pie Village Butchery, the sponsors of our show. We appreciate their support and you can pop in and see them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oniroa. That's the place to go for fine cuts of meat and friendly service. An excellent idea this long weekend. Stock up for a barbecue for your pre-rugby setup tomorrow. All right, so today on the show we have a bit of a children's focus, really. We're going to be talking to a few people who are working with children in the creative arts area. We've got Kirsten Simmons on very, very soon talking about her Zebes creative project for children. We're talking to Tanya Batt about her recent travels overseas. And later on in the show we'll be talking to Mainey Thompson, who's just had some of her poetry put to music and recorded onto a CD. So, as I say, a bit of a children's focus today. This morning we have a focus on children or events for children, and I'm joined by Kirsten Simmons from Zebes, who's got a few events on, coming events and big plans, I think. She's here to tell us all about those. So just want to pull down that microphone a bit, Kirsten, so it's kind of straight onto you there. Yep, good as gold. All right, well, welcome along.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here again.
Yeah, no, hold on. What have I done? That might work better. There we go. Let's try that again. That's entirely better. That was me.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm really good. So tell us a little bit about Zebes and, you know, the idea behind it, because this is kind of a new player in children's entertainment on Waiheke Island.
That's right. I guess it's more children's education, but Zebes actually stands for Zebe, which is Zach Bird, which is my son's name. And it stemmed from me not going back to work and me being able, it is going back to work really. It's more work, but it's me being able to stay at home with Zachy for the first few years of his life, because I think the first 7 years are such a blueprint of what happens with children later on in the future. So this kind of company stemmed from that idea of being able to try and stay at home and maybe earn a little bit of extra cash, which may happen in the future, not happening now, and him being part of everything that I'm doing. So that's sort of where Zebes started from as a concept, because this business has just started this year. And I'm a teacher by trade and have been a teacher for the last sort of 12 years in both early years education and primary, and then, I was a deputy head of a school. So I then moved away from sort of mainstream education and wanted to get into doing my own stuff, because my own stuff is based around music and arts and creativity with children. So yeah, that's where it's come from, and I sort of see it as a really interesting way of teaching children literacy. I'm kind of very interested in the musicality of language and tone and beat and rhythm, and I'm just trying to get projects together that can teach children about different aspects of creativity through different specialists, not just myself, because I don't see myself as a specialist, but more as a facilitator of the arts. So yeah, that's where Zebes sort of stemmed from, I guess.
So I mean, and I suppose you've had a whole lot of experience in our education system, yep, different parts, and I mean, we've got a lot of creativity woven through our education system,
we
don't
have.
We? Yeah,
I mean, we do.
Yeah, and I mean, so when you look at what's going on in schools and stuff at the moment, are you worried that that's been diluted a bit at the moment?
This is exactly what my worry is, in terms of when I was talking to my sister-in-law the other day, and she's got Kale, and she's about 6 years old now down in Wellington, and she said to me one of her art classes was painting blue backgrounds. And I was like, really? Are you sure? And she was like, yeah. And then the next one was that they painted a yellow circle and that got put on, and then it was doing another sort of circle and whatnot, so that they built this idea of a yellow duck being on a blue background. Now, there's many different ways of doing that, and that is basically at the end. Parents came in and had a look at all the ones on the wall, and they were all exactly the same. And New Zealand's such an amazing creative place, and Waiheke's such an amazing creative place. So that kind of, I started talking to a few people about that, and I sort of got a little bit worried that that's what for such a creative place that we would be going that way. And I don't think Waiheke's going that way, because as soon as you step off that boat, I think you're absolutely amazed by the people, the land, the feeling and the atmosphere. But in terms of education and talking to leading educators throughout New Zealand, which I've been lucky enough to do, yeah, that's definitely happening, eh? That is being diluted, and that's kind of scary, because that's our ideas and our children, our future and our thinking. So if our thinking's starting being diluted at that stage, it sort of makes me feel a little bit scared, I guess. So, yeah, it's about putting real creativity back into the system and hopefully taking things away from making blue backgrounds. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there just seems to be that narrowing of focus at the moment onto literacy and numeracy, and, you know, and which of course are important, but, you know, not at the cost of everything else. So
Measurable outcomes, isn't it, for the government, being a wee bit there, yeah.
So what do you hope to add into the educational landscape of the island?
Well, I'm hoping to add, well, I'm sort of working with people to add, I should say. It's not really me, to be honest. What I'm trying to add into things is more of a taste tester of creativity. And as I just spoke before about when you get off the boat and you look around and you feel and you see and you smell and you talk to people, you're overwhelmed by what this island has to offer. And I feel very lucky to be part of it. So what I wanted to offer to children and also to parents, because I'm a stay-at-home mum, I know lots of stay-at-home mums and dads, I want to offer the opportunity of sort of linking in with the creative community in terms of educating our children. So the way the ZB's project is coming together is that it's a collaboration of lots of different artists, and they are going to teach the children different skills, techniques, and just kind of let them be part of what they do. So, for example, the first week we started down at the marae, and the children are going to be working with Janine Clarkin and with Glendale, and they're going to be doing some painting. They're going to be doing it in the whare kai as well. So we arrive and we do a pōwhiri, and it's all about Māori culture as well. So they'll be making some poi with me and things like that. And then each week there's a different specialist. So whether it's Cheryl from Upcycle, if it's Prem from Premaloka Yoga, who's going to be doing creative stories through yoga and some chanting, if it's Alice Doig doing photography, Anu Grace going and doing some songwriting and music. There's a whole array of different people. There's Weaving with Tony Tanner. There's Lyndall Jeffries is going to be doing some casting. There's heaps and heaps of people on board who are super enthusiastic and super creative. And then we get to go to lots of different environments on the island and create what the children represent from the skills and techniques that they're being taught. Throughout this whole thing, the project is also being filmed. So it's going to be made into a children's creative documentary, and that's being directed by Erin Johnson and edited by Aaron Dobell. And that is going to represent the question that I'm asking. And the question overall for this project is, what influences and shapes creativity for children on the island? Now, I know that that's a massive, massive question, but it's also just the project is a taste tester of that. It's just looking at it and taking a snapshot. So the film will hopefully show that to people. And we're also going to be creating a CD so that the sounds of the creative project are able to be heard as well. So whether that's the Turkish workshop that Kimberly Alford's doing, if it's the Japanese one that Masahiro's doing, or whatever, you know, it's culture, it's arts, and it's music, and it's literacy throughout the whole thing as well. So it's a really interesting idea, and it's going to be a fantastic way of not only the children learning from the specialists, but also the parents, and hopefully the specialists or facilitators will be learning from all of us as well, because it's about appreciating where everyone's at in their own creative styles and techniques. And I mean, we've got age range from 2 to 11 in different classes, but so it'll be interesting just to compare what a 2-year-old does and what an 11-year-old does as well. So that's pretty exciting, Chris. It's pretty exciting.
It'll be interesting to see if there is kind of a unique, I suppose, Waiheke iconography or something. I remember I was working in a school, Portobello, out of Dunedin a few years back.
Yeah.
And you know, you get that thing. I mean, you were talking before about kind of standardised pictures, you know, but the house with the chimney and the smoke and the kind of crossed windows on the front and the sun up in the corner. Yeah. And all the kids do that, you know, they all paint that, right? They all draw that.
Yeah.
But at this place, all of the kids drew pirate ships and mermaids. Now, I don't know whether it was, you know, this one particular teacher that they went through school with, but all of the kids drew that. That was their standard thing. And I said to her, and she said, I said, you know, well, that's their kind of like their house and smoking chimney and sunshine is the Pirate Ships and Mermaids. And she was a bit taken aback by that and kind of a bit insulted, I thought. But then she thought about it, thought, hold on, actually, this is something, because it's a seaside town, that reflects, you know, what their experience is. And so they developed their kind of own sense of what art was and what was standard. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens here.
Yeah, it'll be really, really super interesting to see what they come up with, because, you know, you look around, there's so much to influence us and there's so much to do and there's so many amazing people. So whatever they come up with is going to be incredible, and it's going to be great to be able to have that documented as well, and hopefully another little sort of piece of history for Waiheke as well. And the wonderful thing about the project is the response I've had, actually, and it's been the response from everyone of just going, God, that's a good idea, you know. And it's kind of a little bit selfish of me as well, because I'm so interested in it that this seems like such an amazing thing for me just personally, but for the children and everyone on board, you know, it's going to be really, really great. So I'm really looking forward to it. And the whole thing kicks off this Monday, actually, literally kicks off after the rugby when we win.
Yeah.
At Planet, because Planet is an amazing cafe to create. And I did a series of workshops in September, and it's a really good space to start out. So we're doing a tea party there. That's a free tea party for the members of the co-op, because this is called ZB's Kids Co-op. And we're going to kick off there and have sort of a tea party in the afternoon at about 2:30. So anyone who's part of the cooperative can come along and, you know, see what I'm going to do. I don't want to give out anything too much yet, because there's a few surprises. But also, if anyone from the wider community that hasn't accessed this project yet and would like to, you're most welcome just to pop along, and there'll be a project brief and a package for people to sort of take away and have a look at. And even if you're not involved, because the classes are small, it would be great for people just to know what's going on. And if you're interested, just come and have a look, because the project happens on a Monday. And there's two sessions. The first session is from 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning. So that's for the young children between age 2 and 5. And then the second session is for 5 to 11-year-olds, and that's after school, kind of a club between 2:45 and 4:45. So, you know, they're nearly full. The first one's very full with a waiting list. But the second one, there's a couple of spaces left, which is really good, because I haven't done a lot with primary school children yet. So, you know, there is availability there. But for people, I really just want to encourage them that come along and just have a look, you know, be part of it, because a cooperative is about everyone being involved as well. So I'm very open, and with my workshops and stuff as well, I don't claim to be a specialist, but I do claim to be very, very passionate about what I do. And I love children, and I love art, and I love music, and I love words and books. And that's what, you know, all of these things are about. And it's about educating children in a really fun, friendly, secure environment. So please, you know, if anyone wants to know more, give me a shout or come in, or, you know, it's about being open and enjoying this. So, yeah, hopefully we'll see a few people around.
Yeah, so what's the length of the project? Like, how long does it run through to?
It starts on the 31st of October, and it goes for 7 weeks, and then it stops in December, and it breaks for 6 weeks, because then the children will get their own little creative quest bags. Because if we're looking at how this is going to roll, it can't be directly facilitated by a specialist. It has to be the children's interpretation of what they think creativity is, in terms of what they're looking at, what they're sensing, and all those kind of things. So they'll get their own little creative quest bag, and they go out into wherever they are over the school holidays, and they collect different things that they think are creative, or they think that shapes and influences creativity for them on Waiheke. And whether that's here, or it's actually their experiences off the island or abroad or whatever they're going to do, they bring that all back. And then we do another 7 weeks. So actually the whole project starts in October and then ends at the end of March. And it ends with a finale of being, I forgot to say, with all of it as well, that all the bits and bobs that they're doing, they collect, and they're going to sort of collate their own art form, whatever that will look like. So it's all led by the children, this sort of stuff. So it's not me saying, right, we're going to make a huge Waiheke island and put all the bits and pieces that we've collected on it. That's not it at all. They'll experience these workshops and then they'll kind of collaborate together and they'll make it into an art form so that by the end of it, by the end of March, there'll be a finale, wherever they choose to have this finale as well. And it will showcase the piece of art that they've made. It will be the film that they've starred in, or it might be a wee bit tricky to get them to make that one, but they can star in it definitely, and shape it obviously, and then there'll be a CD. And so all of it, we may do a little bit of performance as well, because Anna will be doing some songwriting and so will I, because my background's music too. So yeah, that's the project really. So it starts in October, ends in March, so it's quite a big chunk of time, but I think if you're looking at the question, what influences and shapes creativity for children on the island, you need a little bit longer than a couple of weeks, you know. Yeah, you need some time.
It's an ambitious project.
It is.
So how do people get hold of you and find out more about it and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, I've been putting adverts in the paper. It's been in the Waiheke Weekender and it's been in the marketplace and stuff like that. So my phone numbers are, you can look at them through there, but you can also email me at zbscreative@gmail.com. Otherwise, give me a call at home on 7195. I'm pretty open, so you know, whatever those mediums, whatever's easiest to get a hold of me. And yeah, basically that's what you do.
Cool. And we look forward to seeing some of the results and hearing some of the results and getting those getting the kids in here and
sharing
their songs. And
so, and if anyone has any more ideas for me about what I should be doing, give me a shout, you know. That's what, email me or phone me and tell me about what's happening, because I'm a newcomer to this island, so I don't have an idea of really everything by any stretch of the imagination, and a lot of people do. So I'd really like that contact from the wider community to help out with this, and hopefully this will continue again, you know. It looks like it's going to be a great project. So I'd like to say thank you to everyone who's on board so far. It's been an amazing response, and I think people are helping me out in a big way, and that's a real show of what Waiheke is as a place to live in, and I'm very lucky to be here. So thank you to everyone so far.
Okay, well, thank you for coming in. And
you're welcome.
All right, good luck with the project.
Thanks very much, Chris.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
All right, so I said earlier we've got a bit of a focus on people working with children today, and then though my next guest doesn't exclusively work with children, she works more with stories, and just it so happens that lots of children like stories. Tanya Batts here. Welcome along, Tanya.
Oh, good morning, Chris.
Now, you've been jet-setting, which is why we got you in today, to talk about your travels, because you always go to such interesting places.
Ah, that's the magic of story. It takes you all over the world. Doesn't matter where you go in the world, everyone has got them.
So you've managed to set your feet on Waiheke for a few weeks, but tell us about where you've just been.
I feel like singing that, I've been everywhere, man, across the mountains. But, well, my journey started in, I think it was the end of March, actually, and I headed up to work in one of the international schools in Rangoon in Burma. And from there I headed across to India, and to Orville, and down into South India, Pondicherry area. Then on up to China, where I worked in another school up in Beijing. And then, interestingly enough, I'd had this crazy idea a couple of years ago about taking my little red story truck up to China and driving it across to Europe. And I actually seriously started to investigate this, and for various reasons it proved to be completely impractical and undoable. And then I had this invitation to go to Beijing, and I thought, oh, well, I get to go to China anyway, and I still want to go across land. And so I decided that I would take the Trans-Mongolian rail journey, which is one of the longest train journeys in the world, from Beijing up through Mongolia. And into Siberia and across into Moscow and St. Petersburg. That was kind of a human interest story collecting kind of general, wow, isn't life interesting type experience. And then down into Europe, where I regularly work in the Netherlands.
So
I can break it any time here,
yeah,
Chris,
yeah.
That's right.
No, I want to go back to Burma, because, yeah. You know, that's, well, I mean, obviously pretty dangerous, and well, you know, for the people who live there anyway, it's dangerous, but you know, an area going through a lot of trouble. So, you know, interested on how you perceived that place.
Well, it's really interesting, because I've found in the last 12 months I've kind of found myself in a situation to go to places in the world where there are really kind of lots of quite negative stories about them, Burma being one of them, East Timor being another one, and Colombia just recently being a third. And, you know, if you had to kind of think of countries in the world that had, you know, kind of stories of corruption, violence, drug smuggling, kidnapping, those three countries would be high up there. And on each occasion, I've had a big think about, you know, am I doing the right thing by going there, not just in terms of my own personal safety, but in terms of, you know, politically supporting regimes that, you know, I'm sure most of us would be at odds with. And it's been really, you know, I can't say that, you know, I necessarily went along knowing that I was doing the right thing, but I do feel in hindsight that on all three occasions that the experiences were really valuable. And that's because the experience that I had there was quite, were really positive experiences. And I guess this is how stories change about places as well. That's not to say that the story within those countries are changing very quickly, and often you're in a little bubble when you're there as a visitor anyway, so it's very hard to see how things might really be for people on a day-to-day basis. And that was certainly the case in Burma. I mean, there were a couple of things that kind of, you know, made me think, you know, things were a little out of the ordinary relative to New Zealand. You know, when I would arrive in the school at the moment, I'd be picked up from my hotel and a stick would be thrust underneath the vehicle and they were checking for bombs. And it was only, you know, a week or so beforehand that, you know, a vehicle had been blown up. So there's those sorts of incidents going on all the time, which are really kind of very rare things to happen here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. But here's hoping that things are actually changing for those countries. Yeah, it's difficult to know from the outside.
And I suppose when you like in the international school, so I presume that's what the children of
that's
corporates
right.
that are coming
that's
into the
right.
country, and maybe some of the rulers
yes.
there as well.
Yeah. I did believe that there were actually some of the grandchildren of some of the generals, ironically. But having said that, it was really interesting talking to staff in places like that because, you know, obviously some of them are quite outspoken against this. You know, the situation in places like Burma. And they were quite aware that the school was being watched. In fact, while I was in the school in Beijing, in China, some of the secret police came in and apparently took the heads of the school aside and said, "We don't like what's going on here. The education is too liberal."
Mm.
So, you know, those sorts of things are going on. You know, I'm not going to kind of pretend that everything's kind of, you know, hunky-dory in Burma and East Timor and you know, other places like that. I think, you know, they're examples of, you know, quite extremes that, you know, we can't pretend that don't exist in our country as well. You know, there's levels of corruption everywhere, and obviously places like Burma, it's quite severe.
Also interesting, I think, that the international schools, because you do kind of have this perception, I suppose, because of the clientele, you know, because of private schools and the kind of people are going there, that they would be very focused in on a very kind of more, I suppose, traditional and narrower curriculum rather than, you know, the kind of thing that you're doing with storytelling.
Well, international schools actually tend to be incredibly liberal quite often. That's in part because they tend to be quite a mix of, in terms of their staff, they have people who staff the school from all over the world. And interestingly, there are a lot of, especially through Asia, a lot of Australian and New Zealand teachers in international schools. Generally, relative to New Zealand, generally speaking, Asian kind of view of education is much more conservative than a New Zealand idea about kind of the. I remember when I first went to Thailand to a conference there, and basically I went to a school and they said, you know, the purpose of education is to make good citizens. You probably wouldn't hear anybody saying that quite so kind of emphatically here in New Zealand. We'd talk more about, you know, encouraging curiosity and a love of learning and, you know, these sorts of things. So the wonderful thing about working with stories is that you can say things that are quite subversive, but you're just the storyteller. So I took great delight in places like Burma telling stories like the King's Seed about a king who was looking for an honest ruler and having conversations with children. Like, just imagine you were the ruler of Burma. What kind of choices would you make for your country? Because I could have those conversations within the context of story and probably to say those sorts of things in, you know, more of a kind of a political context would be, you know, near impossible, possibly. Yeah.
So from Burma, and as you say, up through and across China. Now, I mean, I think China is a country that, maybe we only see one part of, which is the coastal part.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you went right across.
Well, I actually went to the north, and I would have loved to have seen. I mean, it's a huge country. I did go to a really interesting kind of like a sort of Walt Disney culture park in Beijing, which obviously the Chinese government, I think they'd created it for the Olympics, actually. And I tell you, it was the most empty place in all of Beijing, and you can't call Beijing empty with 20 million people. It's just absolutely heaving. But there was no one much at this culture park, and they'd rebuilt the entire Chinese kind of mix of all the cultures and their homelands and their dwellings. It was something that was slightly sinister about it, especially the Tibetan section. I have to say I felt quite uncomfortable walking around that area. So mainly the parts of China I saw were Beijing, and I travelled up through northern China, which I have to say really was disturbing, because from the train what I saw was just gross industrialization, deforestation, massive amounts of earthworks, just a very, I remember thinking as I looked out the train, if you wanted a set for an apocalyptic, movie, this would be perfect. And it really made me think, oh, how much of the world actually looks like this compared to green old New Zealand, well, not so green with oil slicks and whatnot these days. But yes, it was a bit of a shock. Having said that, I've spoken to lots of people who've been to some other parts of China, which are quite remarkably green, you know, still very community orientated. But there's massive cities, you know, there's dozens and dozens of cities of a million plus people. It's kind of at a scale that I find, you know, quite hard to really get my head around. And it's probably the only place I've ever been in the world where I actually had trouble breathing. And apparently the air quality has improved, but, you know, your eyes itch and you cough.
And when you're in these places, are you gathering stories as well?
Of course, always. I'm a compulsive story collector. So it's great because people know I love stories. People often bring me stories. And because I'm often working in venues like libraries, then librarians are great in terms of directing me to story. But what's really lovely, of course, is going out. And I try always to kind of go for walks and just actually get out on the streets into the communities. And obviously, I'm quite limited often by my language. Luckily, I'm fairly animated. I can talk chicken to anyone anywhere in the world. So, I'm fascinated by, you know, the beliefs and practices by other groups of people. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then on to South America, you were saying?
I kind of finished up in Europe and whatnot. Yeah.
This is one of those round the world in 80 days kind of trips.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I have to say I feel very guilty about my carbon footprint, which looks like a herd of elephants just trampled kind of across the planet. But yes, I was invited to a Latin American storytelling festival. As it transpired, the largest storytelling festival in Latin America over in Colombia. And again, when this invitation came, I thought, Colombia, did a little bit of googling. Highest rate of kidnapping in the world. And, I didn't know who the people were who had invited me, but I talked to some storytelling colleagues in Europe and the UK, and they said, it's a great festival, you should go. And it's a fairly well-established festival. It's been running for 17 years, and it takes place up in Bucaramanga, which is north of Bogota, which is the capital of Colombia, up near the Venezuelan border there. City of probably a couple million people up there. Amazing following for storytelling. I have to say, I've never been to or worked at a festival that had such a strong community following for storytelling. We were performing every night in a theatre with a capacity for 700, and people queued to come to listen to the storytelling. And they had tellers from all over Latin America, all the countries from Central and Southern America, and then a handful of guests. I was representing Oceania, which I've didn't know if I could actually quite fill those boots, given that there are probably large parts of Oceania I've never laid eyes on.
Do you get a sash?
Yeah, that's right, Miss Oceania. Well, I tell you what, I think what actually kind of sealed my oceanic connection for them was on the Saturday after the event, we went taken out all of the performers to this beautiful country home where we were recording an album for the day. Actually, everyone recorded a short story. And it was a beautiful home with a lovely big swimming pool, and I was the only one who could swim the length of the swimming pool underwater, and they went, wow. She really is from Oceania.
All right. So, and back here, you've got a couple of events before. We've had your children's holiday program.
Yeah, it was great being able to bring all those experiences back into my community and to share them. Because often we go off and we have these experiences, and then you come back and people ask you, how was it? And what can you say? Oh, it was great. It was good. But to actually workshop and share those stories and experiences is a great way of sharing information and defragging.
And now you've got another event coming up.
Be part of the Waiheke Walking Festival. The Once Upon an Island Trust has created the Rainbow Bridge. So this is our Halloween kind of contribution for this year. And we're doing it in conjunction with the Walking Festival, Auckland Council, and the people out at the Whakanakapa Park there, up at the pond, 29th. We've got sessions at 1, 2.15 and 3.30. And people do need to book because you can't just turn up on the day. It's an interactive story adventure, and the sessions are limited to 30 people each time. Yeah.
So is this a little like the last year we had the kind of the story experience in Alison Park?
Yes.
A similar kind of thing.
Yeah, I love taking stories out into our environment, and this one's down at, you know, a lot of people don't know where this pond is. It's up on the corner of Carson's and Gordon's Road there on the way to Whakanakapa. And funnily enough, a friend said to me once, he said, oh, Tanya, have you been to the lake on Waiheke? And I went, oh, the lake? What? He said, oh, no, you've got to go to the lake. And he gave me directions, and so, you know, wandered up there, and I saw somebody coming up the track. I said, is this the way to the lake? And the man gave me a very odd look. He said, you mean the duck pond? And I went, no, I think it's a lake. Anyway, it's a cross between a lake and a duck pond, and it's very beautiful, and we're going to have lots of fun down there. So do book. You can go to the onceuponanisland.info to book through that, or through the Walking Festival as well.
Someone once told me that there's hot pools hidden up in there somewhere.
Well, there well could be. I'm sure there's all sorts of treasures on Waiheke. And we're busily getting ready, of course, for the festival in 2012. And one of the things we want to do is a focus on sacred water sites around Waiheke in conjunction with another group who's also very interested in picking up on that theme for Matariki. So we're looking at creating a pilgrimage up to Cascades for 2012. So maybe we'll find those hot springs on the way.
So you're over the Rainbow Bridge, and then
we've got an adult event at the Eco Village, which is my home these days. And so that's on the 30th, and that's some stories from the underworld or other worlds, the shadow side, the dark side of the moon, from some of the countries that I've been visiting this year. So that's at 7:30 out at the Eco Village at the beautiful community house there.
Before you jet set away again.
Yes, and then I'm heading away to do some touring, actually down the Bay of Plenty, so I'll be able to go and check out firsthand what's actually happened to the beaches down there. And then I'm off working in international schools in Korea and Japan until early December.
Good stuff. Well, the jet setting Tanya Batt, thank you for popping in and catching us up. And do check out those events coming up as part of the Walking Festival. And we'll give you some more information on where you can catch up with all of that. In fact, if you go to waihikiwalkingfestival.org, you can get all the details there. Cool. Thank you, Tanya.
Thanks, Chris.
1 6 7 8 4 AO 3 4 1.
Waiheke Radio. Two frequencies, one great station, 107.4, 88.3.
You are on Island Life here on Waiheke Radio, brought to you by The Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oniroa. And this morning we've had a theme on the show of children's stories, entertainment, and continuing with that theme now, we have Mainey Thompson, who will be known to many of you on the island, a well-known figure around the island, and has had lots of involvement in our community and, of course, internationally in the peace movement, but is also a poet and a published poet. And she's published a few years ago now a couple of books of poetry, and there's now a new take on those poems, and we're here to talk with Mainey about that. Good morning, Mainey. How are you?
I'm fine.
So your books of poetry came out a few years ago now, didn't they?
Yes.
And were they written at the time they were published? Or
no,
are these
some of them were written quite a long time ago when my children were young. What happened was that when I was in Play Centre, we had a very amazing lecturer that taught us about leading Play Centre. And he said the important thing to do if you're writing for children is to listen to them and write it down so that you hear what the children are saying. And if you're writing about them, then you're writing things that mean something to them. And that's what I've tried to do, really, so that a lot of the verses that I wrote about what children have thought and said and done.
So you're going to read one of your poems for us now?
Well, all right, I could read one here called I Wish I Was the Sea. If I were the sea, I'd never have to leave the beach. I'd be there all day and never go away. I'd play with the seagulls and hear them scream and screech. I'd play with the children and chase them up the beach. I'd dash the rocks with angry waves and swirl into little pools and caves. I'd toss the seaweed all around and roll the stones on the sandy ground. There'd be crashing and dashing, lots of laughing and splashing. No one would call, hurry up, it's getting late. Come at once, the bus won't wait. It's time to go, it's time to go. It always seems to be time to go. But if I were the sea, what fun there would be. We'd be there all day, the beach and me.
Now, that's from the book. The name of that book is...
Running in the Wind.
Running in the Wind. Are those books still available for purchase?
Yes, there are plenty of them, but there are very few. There are no more left of the first one called I Heard a Blackbird Singing. We've run out of those copies, but we've got plenty of the Running in the Wind.
And now some of these poems have been given a new lease of life, haven't they?
Yes. That was quite a surprise to me. When I lent my friend Darryl Jones one of the books, the next time I saw him, he said, well, I've put some of them to music. And we made a little CD of them. Would you like to hear it? So I was quite delighted, of course. And I think that they come across. He chose about 8 of the verses. And I think they make quite a very nice little CD of them.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to one of those now, and then we can have a little bit more of a talk about it. So this is from a CD called I Heard a Blackbird Singing, which is poems by Manny Thompson, which have been recorded and put to music by Darryl Jones. And this one is called Boris the Beetle.
Boris is a beetle who lives in a bottle. He is shiny and black like a bright new shoe. If I take a stick and tickle him a little, he will scuttle round in a terrible to-do. If he looks a little worried as he rushes all about, I'll tip the bottle over and let him scuttle out. Boris is a beetle who lives in a bottle. He is shiny and black like a bright new shoe. If I take a stick and tickle him a little, he will scuttle round in a terrible to-do. If he looks a little worried as he rushes all about, I'll tip the bottle over and let him scuttle out. Boris is a beetle who lives in a bottle. He is shiny and black like a bright new shoe.
That's Boris the Beetle from the CD I Heard a Blackbird Sing. That's very charming, isn't it, Manny?
Yes, I think it comes out very well with a little tune.
Yes, and so you had no idea that that was happening? It was a surprise?
No, I had no idea at all.
Yeah, so what's happening with that CD now? What are the plans?
Well, we're hoping to sell some of them. And we had a little launching party on Thursday night. And everyone that was there enjoyed the singing, and Darryl came along and sang with his own guitar the songs, and anyone that was there seemed to be very pleased about it, and we sold most of them that we had already done.
Oh, that's great. So, and you're going to produce more?
Yes, well, we're going to produce another 20 anyway to start with.
Right, and where will those be on sale?
Well, they'll be on sale and it wraps in some of the shops and the market. And Well, we hope that the young children will find something interesting in them, because they're quite different. Because all these verses are really taken from children's own experiences.
And are you still writing?
No, not much now. Well, I mostly wrote for children, and anything I write now is more an adult thing, and it's not... I haven't had any of them published yet.
All right, so, okay, well, we'll be looking out for that, and, of course, we'll be playing those songs and on our children's show, because it's lovely to have that local flavour for that show. So look out for those, I suppose, in the art gallery shop and perhaps some of the shops in Oniroa.
Yes, I think so.
Yes, very good. Okay, let's listen to another one of those to close off there. This one, timely, coming to the end of the school holidays. It's called Off to School. And I presume this is about a five-year-old heading off for their first day of school, is it?
Or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a listen.
Jump down the steps and hop to the gate. Run to the bus stop and wait, wait, wait. First comes a taxi, then comes a van. Next comes the postie and the ice cream man. A green station wagon with a boat on the rack. An old white ute with a dog on the back. A tractor, a tanker, a mini and a jeep. A red sports car and a truck full of sheep. Any minute now our bus will appear. A rumble and a toot and it's here, here, here.
Here we go, that's Daryl Jones with his take on the poems of Mainie Thompson from the CD I Heard a Blackbird Singing. So thank you very much, Mainie, and congratulations on the release of your first album.
Yes, thank you.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oniroa.